Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Osiris.
Welcome to Wheels Off, a show about the messy reality of the creative life. I'm Rhett Miller. That's when it got wheels off. We started on and we ain't gonna stop. Oh, she made me feel like a god. That's when it got wheels off. Amy Ray is known for her work with Indigo Girls, which she and her partner in the band, Emily, officially formed in 1985, though they started performing together in 1981. Amy has a great new solo album that just came out called If It All Goes South. It is, I think, her sixth, maybe her seventh solo record. She's made a lot of records. She, as a solo artist, and she with the Indigo Girls have made a lot of records. And she, like I say at the end of this interview, she has walked the walk. She has done a lot to advance the causes closest to her heart. She is a true activist, and I admire her for that. And I really admire her approach to music in general. Ever since the first time I heard Closer to Fine on the radio, I remember driving. I tried not to tell her this, but I wound up telling her at one point during the interview. I pulled over. I was on my way home. I remember like it was yesterday. I was on my way home from an appointment with a psychiatrist, and the song came on, and I had to pull over because I was just so blown away by this thing that they were doing, because it was the thing that I wanted to do. You know, smart, intricate lyrics, basically set atop a folk structure, folk music, Americana kind of structure, with maybe some good harmonies, though I don't know that I've ever been a part of something that was as harmonically pleasing as what she and Emily put together for the Indigo Girls. Anyway, Amy Ray is somebody I really admire, and she's such an easygoing, easy to talk to person. And I think that the wisdom and insight that she shares during the course of this interview is something you're really going to be grateful for having heard. So please welcome to Wheels Off, Amy Ray. Welcome to Wheels Off, Amy Ray. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. I'm a big fan of yours, so this is awesome for me.
Man, well, right back at you. It's so great being able to talk with you. For the edification of our listeners, from where are you logging in?
I'm logging in from Dahlonega, Georgia. Down in my office. I guess it's audio, so you won't see it, but yeah.
Is that, I see behind you, is that some sort of a snow device?
That big? That's my dad made that when he was a teenager. He lived in Florida, and he used to actually ride behind a boat on that, which is just like a big plank, you know? But he was a trick skier too, so I guess he could handle the what would happen if it flipped, you know.
Do y'all use it in the snow, or is it just something really cool for the background?
It's like, it's not even for the background. I actually just stuck it there because I had it somewhere else and I didn't even realize it was in the picture. But yeah, I'm figuring out what to do with it actually, because I've got a bunch. He passed about 9 years ago, and I still have stuff that I'm trying to figure out, like where to hang it, you know, and that thing weighs a lot. So
yeah, I bet.
It's I might beautiful. Just prop it, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. So is that in Georgia? Is that the same place where you grew up? Like, is that the same town where you're from?
I'm from Atlanta, Georgia, born downtown at Grady Hospital. And that's where I lived until about 30 years ago. And then I moved up to Dahlonega. And my dad was originally from Florida, from middle Florida. And then he moved up to Atlanta and married my mom and went to Emory. And all my mom's side of the family is deep Atlanta, generations.
Wow.
Generations from the wrong side of the tracks, as we say.
So it wasn't the hoity-toity folks from like Gone with the Wind?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't, yeah.
I was named after that. My mom loved Rhett Butler.
Oh my God, are you serious?
And then later I was like, he's kind of a jerk.
It's a little problematic, but
the whole story is problematic.
You've changed it. You've owned it.
Thank you.
Yeah. You're the new self.
There you go.
Yeah.
Amy, it's so cool. So what creative project are you working on at the moment and how does it light you up?
Well, I just finished a solo record and that came out, and so I'm still like making little videos and, you know, posting things, and I have fun doing that kind of stuff. But Emily and I, Indigo Girls, are trying to finish a song for a movie called Glitter and Doom that is like a crazy sort of Moulin Rouge a la Two Gay Men and Their Relationship Through Our Music movie. So it's a musical, but we're not in it, obviously. It's just, and it's our music, but it's like mashed up in this very kind of punk rocky meets Cirque du Soleil, Rocky Horror kind of way. So it's pretty, it's cool. It's like the project that, I don't know, we love it. Like, we love the musical aspect of it. It's just very inventive. So we're trying to come up with something for the ending credits. And then, we're doing that and we're on tour all the time right now. So, but the writing lights me up. And then when I'm at home, I like just working outside, you know, building things and creating, you know. I have a million animals. I have 8 dogs and 7 cats. So I do a lot of animal rescue. Currently getting one of my fences worked on because I tried to fix it and it didn't work. So no. I like the outdoor sort of, I live in the country. So, you know, I like to be outside. Yeah.
Boy, have you bonded with Emmy Lou Harris about the animal rescue? She's a big
a
dog
little
rescuer.
Bit. I accosted her about it. I think I scared her because I was like, hey, I do this. You know, I was very, Emily and I are kind of like puppy dogs. We sort of jump on people when we're fans, you know, and yeah, she was very nice about it. She said we needed to talk. So I think what she's doing is very impressive.
Well, and you too, obviously. That's so great.
Hers is on a whole other level, though.
Yeah,
you know, mine's a home operation, strictly like homemade.
So the song for the movie, it's a closing credits song. Did somebody, a director or whatever, give you like homework? Like, did they tell you what they want the song to be like or sound like, or are you just totally coming up with any?
They basically said, y'all, we don't write together either. So what we're doing is writing a song, and we're going to see which one's better for the movie, and we might even create something from both of them. We don't know. He said, the director said, hey, just, you know, you've seen the movie, you've read the script, just write an Indigo Girls song and do an arrangement of, you know, classic Indigo. And I don't know what that means, but but we're going for it, whatever it is, you know. I don't know. Writing's a mystery, you know.
What an interesting dynamic to both write a song and then go head to head. Y'all have been doing this for a while.
Well, it's not competitive. I mean, it's competitive in some way, you know. I mean, Emily is she'll hit the nail on the head. I'm writing in the spirit of like giving it the old college try, you know. But also, I think like it'll be interesting because there's a chance that whatever we write could be put together in some way. Mm-hmm. And when we try to write together, like at the same time, which we've tried before, it really kind of dilutes the other person's expression too much. I mean, she does a lot of co-writing up in Nashville, but I don't do much of that. But I think just our particular way of working has always been write separate. When we come together, the arrangement is really what makes it Indigos. So when we've tried to write together, it's been like painful, you know, because we don't fight or anything. It's just she's got a certain vocabulary and I do. And when we try to adjust to each other, I feel like it dilutes, especially what she's doing, because she kind of, you know, she can't be in her head as much and just stay and create, right? So this will be cool. We'll see what happens.
Congrats on the new solo record. That's fantastic. It's so cool.
Thanks.
Do you still get nervous when you're putting out a new thing? What people are going to think, how it'll be received?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I don't know if I ever was I think for me, the process is so fun, you know, and I do the solo thing because it's, you know how it is. It's like you have one thing and you do another and it feeds you a different way. And I do it partly just for the experience of doing it. So it's almost like when we're done, I just put it out there. I don't know. I don't even read what people are saying. Sometimes I'll ask my friends, like, is it good news or is it bad news out there? You know, because they'll be honest with me. But, you know, I honestly, this record was so fun to make. I kind of just put it out there. Now I'm just doing my due diligence. You know, I can't help but be like a record label sort of person and know exactly that I need to work, you know? And it's really in the spirit of the whole band, though. I feel like if I just stuck it out there and didn't do anything to support it, it'd be like not honoring the band and everything they put into it, because that would be so slack of me, you know, to do that.
I know.
So, yeah. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It's funny how the work isn't making the record in a lot of ways. The work is putting the record out and obviously going out on tour behind it. It's funny. Roseanne Cash had a line that I liked where she said, they're not paying you for the 2 hours on stage. It's the other 22 hours of schlepping around.
She's so right. She always says the most poignant, right on the nose thing. Yeah, no, it's true. The 2 hours is, shoot, I mean, I'd play for free anywhere, you know. It's the schlepping.
Yeah. And you still do, you play a lot.
Yeah, we do. Emily and I play a lot. I mean, we play for a living. That's what we do, you know. But we also play to feed our souls, so it's kind of like a mixture, and we can never quite figure out how much of it is to feed your soul and how much of it is to pay your mortgage, but you appreciate the work, you know, right now. So, yeah, we tour. We never go out from, I mean, after the pandemic, we had a lot of makeup dates. So we played like a couple of times when we played a month straight, but we don't typically, that's crazy. We don't do that usually. It's usually for us at this age. It's like we both have kids. Our parents are elderly. You know, it's just been, we've been at it a long time. So we usually do 2 weeks, maybe two and a half at the most. Yeah. And then go home for like 10 days.
It's funny. Yeah, that's about our limit too. And thinking back on the years ago when you would go out for 3 months, I'm sure you did the same thing.
I never did 3 months. Okay. I was always looking at people like y'all going, what? That's crazy. Oh. Emily and I could not do more than a month. We tried 6 weeks one time and it about killed us. We about killed each other, actually. Yeah. Yeah. How did you do that? How did you do 3 months? I mean, I don't even relate. I can't even.
It was early days and there was a lot of complaining. And it was our first year, our first years in a bus and pre-sobriety. So I'm sure there was a lot of just everybody, you know, self-medicating their way through it all.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah. That makes sense. You'd have to, right?
Yeah. I know that you, for you, it's been, it must have been an interesting road because of what seems from the outside like pretty early success. Like, I remember the first time I heard you guys pulling the car over on the way home from a, you know, therapy session in high school and just having to stop and listen because I felt like somebody was doing the thing that I had always dreamt of doing, right? Like the lyrics and the melody with a really kind of folk music grounded in that kind of Americana style. And I was blown away. When you were starting out, do you remember knowing that this was going to be your life? Do you remember an epiphany moment that music was it for you? How did it start, the earliest moment?
I mean, when I was playing, when I was like 10 or 11, I didn't think of it as ever as like, this is going to be who I am, you know? I mean, I, you know, sang songs, cover songs in my bedroom and just, it was just fun. I think when Emily and I, we were about 15 and it was like 1981. And we were in high school and we started singing together because we were in the chorus together. And we just decided to like try to learn a song together for like a talent show or something. And that is when I had the epiphany, actually, because when I heard her singing harmony, because I wasn't really like a good harmony singer at that point at all. I mean, I was just like pretending I'm singing melody half the time. In order to psych myself into doing it, you know? Yeah. And I had a lot to learn. But yeah, when I heard Emily and my voice together and she was singing all that great harmony, I was like, oh, this is what I want to do, you know? It wasn't like I want to do it on my own. It was like, this is what I want to do, this thing. And I don't think she didn't feel quite the same epiphany, you know? I think she was like, this is fun, you know? She's very like, she was a senior and I was a junior. So we had that, like that age difference, you know, but, I didn't know about like career thing. It was more like, I'm going to do this. It wasn't like, I'm going to make a living, because in my mind, I was like, no matter what, I'll do this and I'll go to college, because my parents were really into everybody going to college, which was like such a privilege, you know, when I think about it, because it gave me 4 years of access to audience and Kinko's and, you know, it was copy machines and making posters and the college bookstore. And, you know, I mean, you got to reuse all the resources of the school, and that's, you never can underestimate how important that is. So, I definitely, yeah. And then I think when we started making little records and being, we were indie and stuff and touring around, I kind of started to feel like maybe we could make it a living, you know, because I had been working, I worked at like a Pizza Hut and I worked at like a record pressing plant, which was my favorite job, that Georgia record pressing plant. And then I didn't have to do that anymore because I made enough playing at Good Old Days, you know, or whatever. So that's, yeah. So I guess it was around probably when I really knew it was going to be like the career, was probably when I was 21 or something.
That's amazing. Was there, because I'm trying to think of how old you guys would have been when it first broke through. I'm trying to think of the
23, 24.
So there was a few years probably of squalor and sort of week to week.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, I mean, I lived in an apartment that was like $350 a month. It was, you know what I mean? I mean, yeah. I didn't have like huge expenses. I had my family to fall back on if I needed. I wasn't scared. I was just living in an apartment with a roommate, and you know, you don't have a lot of cost when you're in your early 20s. It's like beer money or whatever, you know, pizza.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it wasn't, no. And I mean, we paid our dues for a very short, I mean, I would say we started when we were young, but it never felt like paying dues. So the dues were really paid when we started, like, you know, we toured with REM, but that was like, an anomaly in some ways, you know, and the rest of it was like, you know, hitting the road in a van and, you know, stopping at the truck stop to make phone calls and advance the show and stuff. But it wasn't for that long. I mean, we didn't have to do it for 10 years, you know.
And when it happened, it seems from the outside like it happened kind of fast and you guys were still pretty young. Was that heady? Was that hard?
It was heady for sure. I mean, it wasn't hard like, oh my God, my life is so hard. It was heady like, it was hard, like the ego thing, you know, when I look back on it. Yeah, I was young and I was also young for my age in some ways, like emotionally, you know. And I think when I look back at, you know, painful footage of us doing interviews when we're 23 years old, I'm just like, oh my God, I am just like such a just a diva, you know, holier than thou, kind of just a jerk, really, you know, trying to be cool all the time. But, you know, that's what you do when you're that age, right? I mean, it's part of the rite of passage. Everybody older than you at that point knows exactly what's going on, and you're just making a fool of yourself, you know? But it's cute, you know? It's like we were learning as we went, and we kind of fake it till we make it kind of band, you know? But I definitely got, I think the reason, you know, we were touring in Europe and here, and we had like longer tours, and we definitely had more fights with each other, which is rare for us. And I think because of the headiness of it, you know, we started to get into our corners, you know, and like protect our own interests in some ways, which is not good for a duo. No. So we learned pretty quickly, you know, by talking and communicating and having a good manager to like, just to kind of get past that stage. And it was pretty short. I mean, we didn't have to struggle with it for very long, you know. We just had to get used to what we needed to get grounded. And I think what for us, it was like just going home more, you know, and not being gone for so long. Because then we could get grounded and sort of be humbled in our community and our families and know what was important, you know. And that's what it took probably to make us be better people, you know.
Yeah. I love that. It's funny that you say humbled. I think about that when people misuse that word, when they win a Grammy or something and say, oh, I'm humbled. And it's like, no, right now you're actually the opposite. But you're right. You're like, you go home and everybody reminds you that you're just a regular person, and that's truly being humbled.
Yeah.
How long have you been together now?
So we're 58, or she's 59. Started when we were 16. So whatever that math is, 42 years.
Wow. And that's that's pretty much unbroken. I mean, you must have taken
that little... is unbroken. That is unbroken. Yeah. I mean, I'd say like, okay, when we were in college, she went to Tulane for a year, and she was a year ahead of me, and I went to Vanderbilt in Nashville for a year. But we played during the summer and on the weekends too. So yeah. She was doing solo stuff and I was too, but we were really, we were, you know, doing it. We didn't start calling ourselves the Indigo Girls until 85. And before that, we just went by our last names or whatever, but we were doing it. Yeah.
God, that's so cool. There's not many bands that have been together that long. That's truly impressive.
Well, just living this long is good, I think.
I know, knock wood. So I feel like part of your music and your public persona has always been about being real and like acknowledging vulnerability. And I wonder for you, when you encounter the self-generated obstacles, the stuff inside of you that tries to keep you, the voices in your head that try to keep you from making your art or just from making it through your daily life, I wonder how have you figured out to get beyond those self-generated obstacles?
It's usually just through allies and friends, you know, honestly. I don't think it's an inside job, but it's not something you can just do yourself, you know. For me, one of the things that really helped was when we first started to kind of really make it, and through like the early 90s, I moved up to the woods in like 92, and I was like, that's what I needed, because I was drinking a lot and kind of in this spiral all the time of like shame and self-hate from being gay and, you know, masculine identified in some ways, and just, I hated myself, you know, and also just had things from childhood and the things that we all struggle with, you know, that everybody has in some way. And so, and self-doubts and like self-doubts, but not actually doing anything to make that better. Right. So it's like, well, you know, you're like not up to what you want to be as a musician, but you're not practicing. So like, what's in there? Right. So I had to kind of, for me, I had to kind of get out of myself and start, you know, actually working on something like practicing and trying to get better at what I do, move up to the woods, get away from people, stop drinking. That's kind of some of the main things. And then the other stuff is just mentors and friends. You know, when I'm having trouble with like internalized homophobia or something, you know, if I talk to a few people that are older than me or even younger actually, that I trust, that sort of are one with their body in some way that's really rare, it makes me feel better, you know? And a lot of, actually, you know, something that really helped us, both of us, I think, was when we've always been activists, but when we started working with Native American activism and sort of forwarding that movement of environmental sustainability and cultural sustainability through their work, just supporting their work, the mentors we met in those communities have been pretty constant, you know, for us in every way. So every kind of activism we do, every kind of living that we're doing is informed by a lot of these elders and a lot of youth in these communities that we've met through activism, because we see sort of a different way of living in some ways that's more intergenerational and more honoring people for what they are in their humanity, and not as much about, you know, this business of, you know, the surface and looks and who's cool and all that stuff. It's very different. I mean, obviously, Indian communities have same problems, teenage problems and all the things that we deal with when we're growing up. But like, there is a different vibe around the intergenerational sort of care that goes on, and the way families are so extended, including friends that are related maybe through some distant aunt or something, you know, and it's like everybody's really bound. And when there's problems you have a lot of, it's, you know, the therapy is sort of in the group and in the practices in some ways. I mean, I don't want to romanticize it. There's obviously a lot of stuff that can't get taken care of, like in any community, but I've just found a lot of, I just found a lot of stuff that was valuable for, as far as like tools for me, just for me in my own self. And it's kind of the gift that we were given, you know, to like work with those groups. We gained a lot ourselves, more than we ever could give, you know? So and that's one of the gifts we got, is like something about self and evolving, you know, as a self. So yeah, long-winded answer, but activism helps.
Yeah, that's what I want. And that larger scale activism that you've taken part in for, you know, for your whole career, it seems like, is pretty incredible. But I've also heard a lot of stories about you mentoring and helping younger artists. And I wonder how much that gives back to you to do that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I usually do it because I'm a fan. It's of what they're doing. So it's not really a like, here, let me help you. You know, it's more like, I love your music. You know, like, do you want to open for the show? Or do you want, what do you need anything? Like, what do you need to be able to do what you are doing? Because you need to get out there. Like, you're great, that kind of thing. And so we just, you know, we take bands on the road and that we love, and they're often younger than us and trying to get something going. Or we share resources or whatever, you know? Yeah, yeah. It definitely gives back, because I'm a fan of people's music. So I discover new music and I get real excited and want to like help, you know?
And so you have one kid of your own or more?
One. Just one. So, okay. And then Emily has one.
And then, so you're a little ways away from having a teenager or an adult, but it'll happen before you know it.
That's what I hear.
Believe me, it will. And so I wonder about this. You've shared a lot of wisdom. I wonder if you could maybe try and distill some of it. Imagine a 21-year-old version of you in today's world, and what advice you might give this younger version of yourself.
Oh, boy. I was trying to think of what I would tell Ozzy. I am keeping a journal for her, because I'm afraid I'll be gone when she's, you know, really,
not quite.
You know what I mean? I mean, I'm older, you know, she's very young. You know, it depends on what you want to be in life, but I usually try to, I think the most important thing is to honestly try to love yourself. And that means, and that might mean you need allies and mentors to go to and learn, because some people have to learn to do that, you know? And that's kind of where it starts. It seems really cliche, but it really does start there, you know? And if you have that kind of self-worth, if you can look yourself in the mirror and look at yourself in the mirror and like not cringe, you know, and just try to realize what a great thing life is, you know? And I always tell Ozzy to be curious, you know, just ask questions. If something's bothering you, or you feel weird about something, try to get curious about it, because oftentimes that can help you sort of slay those dragons, you know, that you're scared of. Is curiosity is very powerful, and people don't know what to do with it. So often it can sort of overwhelm any negativity, I think. And it also has to be from a sincere place of like really trying to learn to be curious about people that are different from you and situations that are not the greatest situations, you know, like, what is this about and why is this happening? And, you know, things like that. So I always say, be curious. And I think also like, I guess I'm a lover of life. And so I'm always wanting to encourage people that are young to like realize, you know, that there's so much out there, you know, cause I know kids in my area that are just like, I'm so bored. I hate the country, you know? And it's like, what do you say, you know, to a 21 year old kid who's just feels like they're in a cage, you know, where they are. And I'm always like, you know, there's a lot more out there than you know. Cause I have a friend she's like 17. She's the granddaughter of a friend of mine. And she's just like, I hate it here. everyone's so backwards. And she's mixed race, so it's also hard because I'm in the rural mountains, you know. And I'm like, well, she's like, why do you stay here? And I'm like, well, you know, if everybody left that felt, you know, like acceptance was important and wasn't racist and, you know, was trying to be tolerant and all that stuff. If all those people left that really believe in love and are really trying to do the good thing, there wouldn't be much left here. So I just feel like you stay where you are and you try to see what you can do until you can't anymore. And then you leave and try to do it somewhere else. But, you know, it's hard for, I just always say the same thing your mom says, you know, get involved. But it's true. It's like, it's really true, you know, like, get involved, like try to help your community. And it usually ends up feeding you in some way to do that. But I don't know, you know, no one can give you advice when you're 21. It's like, honestly, some of the 21-year-olds I know are so much smarter than me anyway. They just, you know, evolution is real. You know, the musicians get better, the activists get better, people get smarter. I wish they'd vote, but that's, you know, it's hard to get the kids to vote right now.
Yeah.
They feel very hopeless about things. And so they're just like, screw it, right? But we need them, you know.
For real. Yeah. Especially in Georgia and Texas.
I know. Yeah. Florida.
Boy, I love what you say about loving yourself. It's funny how often this comes up in these conversations. The most generous, kindest people often are find it really easy to be unkind to themselves. And if I love the just the being conscious to love yourself. That's such great advice.
Yeah, you can't sustain much if you don't, because things start falling apart. You know, even when you're like a great activist doing all this good work in the world, things will start falling apart and you'll start not being a great activist at some point too, you know, because you'll be, when you hate yourself that much, you start directing at other people. And it just happens, you know, without you even knowing it. So I think, you know, you got to start there. You got to just try to fix that thing inside you that's crying all the time, you know.
Totally. Amy, well, this is so great. I really appreciate it. I really admire how you walk the walk and the way you've conducted yourself and your generosity over all these years to obviously to all the causes, but to other musicians as well and your music. I love it all. I'm so grateful that you agreed to be a part of this Wheels Off conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rhett. I love what you do too. I've been following you for years, so it's good to talk to you.
Oh, so sweet.
And not just because we had the same manager. It was before that. So
I know. Isn't that funny? That was 20 years ago.
I know, right?
I know. It just goes and goes.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. And I hope our paths cross soon.
Yeah, me too. Take care. All right.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to Wheels Off. Please be sure to rate and review the show on iTunes. That helps us appear higher in the search results and lets other folks know that it's a cool podcast to listen to. Also, as the kids say, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or anywhere else that you listen to shows like this so that you never miss an episode. This has been Wheels Off, and I'm Rhett Miller, encouraging you to create every day. Thanks, y'all.
Osiris.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan. And this is the Corner of Gray Street podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the corner of Gray Street.